love, kindness, human connection. These are some of the things we talk about on the Danny Painter Show. It's a thing. This show is intended for a more mature audience. We might sometimes say bad words.
On a Zoom with me for the Danny Painter Show, which is very weird, because I think I've known you for as long as I've been in the TV film industry.
We were young.
We were young. Jafta Mohlubane, hello, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much.
I'm excited to talk to you.
I am honored, you know?
I met Jafta working on a kids' TV show on SABC 2 called World of Winners, and you could win daily prizes, and I was the presenter, and Jafta went from camera to, I think, directing at one point, to stage managing, to producing, to all of the things, and we did that for a really long time.
I think you are with Right, it was 5 years, and then with you, I think 3 years.
Yeah, it was a long time.
Right came in when it was still like fillers, 5 minutes fillers.
Yeah.
And then when it became a daily lab show, 30 minutes, then you came in with Rowena Shodris as well.
Yeah.
And Leroy Wright.
And Leroy Wright. Yeah. Look at all of us now. Like, look at where we've come. I was actually talking to Wright and Leroy about this the other day, how World of Winners was such a great platform for all of us. For everyone, even like you guys, the directors, producers, camera, like everyone went on to do things. I mean, Prahin did Big Brother. You did Big Brother. You've done, Real Housewives. Yes. You've done all of these massive shows. But let's go back into history before World of Winners. Where were you? What were you doing? Where are you from? What did you study? I want your back history.
Yes, yes. So high school, I was at high school briefly. So I went to General Smuts in Vereeniging, and I was always interested in the arts, you know. So I did a lot of acting, you know, that amateur acting in high school. And I wanted to go to acting school. And so I applied for VETS. I went to VETS School of the Arts. And, you know, back then, obviously, I didn't know that, you know, to make it in the industry, you have to be exceptional if you want to be an actor, you know. but I didn't know, because I really wanted to become an actor, you know. But I also had a passion for storytelling. I've always had a passion for storytelling. So whichever one came first, you know, I would take. And I remember one day while going to class, so at VETS, there's this notice boards, right, where they always look for young talent, obviously at acting schools and, you know, AFTERS, the School of the Arts.
Yeah.
And there was, remember that Dab character?
Yes.
Yes.
Yes. Yes.
So World of Winners and SABC2 were looking for someone to go into the mascot. We were going to do like a road show.
Okay.
And it was like, you know, okay. And it was like $500 a day. I mean, I'm a student back then. $500 is a lot of money.
Dude.
You know? So I went in there. That's when I met Daryl and Glenn. And then they put me in front of a camera. And they asked me to make moves. Like, do you know Dab character? Yes.
Yeah.
You know, do you think we can be in a suit, you know, for like 3 hours at a time or 1 hour at like 100 degrees Celsius and, you know, do the move? We're like, yeah, man, that's, you know, like, whatever, man. That's simple. That's how I met them. And they said they would call me. I mean, it never happened. But then that was my first line of contact with them, you know. While I was still studying at VETS, I was studying Bachelor of Arts in Dramatic Arts, which is basically television studies, acting studies, and production studies all in one, right? I did that for the first year. The second year, I was then offered, no, actually, I called to say, yo, if you guys ever offer internship, please holla, you know? And I think about 3 months later, they did just that, you know? And yeah, the rest is history. And then I started doing part-time while I was still at school, part-time on my second year. And, you know, Daryl, he always said, either you go to university or come work with us full-time, university of life, you know? And I was like, you know what? I can always go back to school. It's not like, high school where if you drop out, it's a problem. I can always take like a gap year, work full-time and go back.
Yeah.
And I never went back, I just went there and I stayed there. I mean, everything started happening, at World of Winners. We were busy like daily. Remember, like we were living that show, like year in, year out, month in, month out.
Every day.
You know, so, and I think those were the foundation steps, of me learning the basics. Because I came in zero knowledge, I learned all the basics of production, and yeah.
It was a really good platform, I think. Just to revert back, Daryl and Glenn, who Jafter was talking about, were the owners of Buffwetsu Productions, who ran World of Winners, Captain Zaga. They did a couple of movies, short films, I think, lots of voice work. And they were like the production house that World of Winners on SABC2, which was the biggest kids show on SABC2, was based on. And it was a really good space for everyone because we were all young. We were all fairly new in the television industry and everyone was learning from each other. And one day Jafter would be behind the camera and one day Jafter would be directing the show. And one day we would be learning to edit. I remember sitting upstairs in the old house learning to actually edit a show. And also the animators that were there doing Captain Zaga, which was South Africa's first animated series, doing the voice for that. That taught me voice work, which I'd never done before. So all of these things were so pivotal to where we are now. So talk to me from World of Winners. So I obviously left, went into radio, other TV. You then with Temba, who I had such a crush on. I just need to tell you, I had the biggest crush on him, like ever. Don't tell him though. you guys started.
Oh, you had a crush on Temba. Okay. I didn't know that.
Little one. You guys started Simamo. Tell me about that journey and to where you are today. Cause you guys have done some absolutely insane stuff.
All right. So, look, I think everyone, at some point they want to do their own thing, right? So, after World of Winners, that's when we went into, the real world. And what I mean by that is that at World of Winners, we're like in a cushion because as much as, we were learning and everything, we had like a stable income, all those years we were at Buffwetsu Productions, we knew that at the end of the month, there was a salary. And when World of Winners came to an end, because that was the bread and butter, that was running the company, and then we were told, listen, you now have to go fend for yourselves. For the first time, I became a freelancer. Oh my goodness. Oh, that's when you're like, okay. From earning a salary every month to earning a salary every 3 months, every 2 months, like, what the hell is going on?
But can I also just interject here? Can I just interject? So at this point, you were pregnant with or you just had your first child, I think. You just bought a house in like Midrand or somewhere fancy. Yes. And you had a Mercedes-Benz. And like, because we were all living, right? We were all living. And then all of a sudden, contract gone.
Mm-hmm. So all those responsibilities. Now I've got a baby, right? A newborn baby. I've got a house. I've got a nice car, and that stable income is no longer there. So I have to go and hustle. So I went to Big Brother, right? Which was like by referral. So Glenn had previously done Big Brother. So he said, no, I've trained this boy. He understands storytelling. And because Big Brother is such a big team, and I know there's levels to directors. There's the junior, mid, and senior. So he's going to come in at junior level, right? For content directing. And then, I got in there and, I started learning, okay, this is storytelling reality. That's when I started reality, the year 2007, right? Because we left, I think, Buffwetsu 2006. right? So it was three months, Big Brother. And then I'm like, okay, now I must look for another job, right? And okay, now I must start sending my CV out, something I don't know, I've never done, you know? Because up from varsity, I went to Buffetti Productions. Now I must start marketing myself, you know, hustling. Okay, Big Brother's ending. I was fortunate again to find another job for SABC2. The production was called Tora Khanan. Also, Glenn referral, because he knows people in the industry. Okay, cool. So far, so good. Another 3 months job. And then that came to an end, and then there was nothing, right? For like a month or two. I was like, oh my goodness. And then I was fortunate to get a call from Aaron Brew. They were starting a channel, One Gospel. And I went there for about 6 months, you know. So that then, that was the routine now, the cycle. You know, I would get jobs for like 6 months and then not work for a month, get a job for 3 or 4 months. So that taught me to save for a rainy day. But obviously I wasn't saving because I'm still young, you know. And you don't just get it. So on rainy days, I used to go to my mom, ask her for, you know, a loan, you know, just like, yo, you know, help me here and there. Like, it took me a couple of years to get it right, you know, and to get back to the swing of things in terms of a stable income. And for like 5-6 years, you know, I had that struggle because I still have to pay for the house, right? At some point, I had to sell the house in Cresta to move to a smaller house in Midrand. That's when I went to Midrand, because I just couldn't afford, you know. And the savings from that big house, then, you know, I could, you know, balance debt here and there, you know. And then I think at Endemol, because I did a couple of Big Brothers, they gave me an opportunity then to work with them because they liked how I work. And then I went back to the, you know, the permanent salary thing with them, you know. It started with a fixed-term contract, and over time, they offered me a one-year contract. And I started, you know, recovering now and, you know, being stable. And it was at Endemol, and I was like told by some of the peers in the industry, like, yo, you've been doing this Big Brother thing for so long, and you've been doing other productions for so long, and you are good at what you do, which is directing and storytelling. Maybe one day, just think of doing your own thing. And obviously, I'm like, ah, come on, man, I'll never do that. Like, but I wanted to, you know. So I would talk to Temba about it, like, yo, man, maybe you and me, because, you know, we started this journey, like, together. One day, let's just open a company and just see what happens. And, you know, we talked about it. You know, we always talk. But we always find ourselves working together. And then I think in 2014, there was supposed to be three of us. And then the other partner, because he had his own company, is like, no, you guys just go ahead. We registered the company. There was nothing happening. We were still freelancing, working. I was still at Endemol. And then Tema got a gig for us to go to Zambia, this corporate gig. It didn't pay a lot, but it was like a substantial amount of money because we were there for 10 days. Yeah, for us, it was like, okay, wow, you know? And after that, we were getting referrals, doing like small corporate productions and all of that. And while I was still at Endemol, I started Autonomous Tembu and Papa Penny are here, you know. So what they do, you know, China will speak to them to say, looking for this kind of show. And then I would then be the brainchild to come up with a concept, develop it, and execute it while they give me resources. And they were still telling me, dude, you can actually see with the person doing this whole thing. You can do the same thing under your company. And then one day you're like, you know what? Let me just write a concept down, submit it to Mnet, SABC, wherever. And then we got a call back, and then I just followed up and did my thing. And, you know, it started small. And, you know, now I can say, yo, I know how to do that, you know, like creatively, you know, come up with a concept, develop it from inception to production phase, you know, execution and deliver, you know. All of that, obviously, you know, through the years and years of experience. Because now I'm like, what, 17 years now in the industry?
Wow.
You know? So, yeah.
Wow. 17 years. Okay, mm-hmm. So like, You go through all of this, you're training, you're with Endemol, you're doing Big Brother. Thank you. One day, I might just have to say thank you, Jafta. You changed my life. One day, I am obsessed with Big Brother, especially Big Brother Nigeria. I'm in love. Like, I can't breathe.
Right.
Big Brother's on. But one day, I was very lucky to know Jafta, and they took me on a tour of the Big Brother house. I don't know if you remember this, but I lost my mind. I was like, oh my God, it's so amazing. It's so much smaller. It's so much bigger. I never knew that. It's like the greatest thing. So thank you for that. And if you ever do that again, I really would love to do Big Brother. I'm just, that's my reality show. Like,
you want to go in the house?
I want to go in the house. Like, give me the booze, put me in the house.
No privacy. You know what that means, right?
Yeah.
Oh my goodness. Okay.
Yeah. I'll be great, Jeffy. You know me. I love a good party.
I know you're great, but I also know you like your privacy. So if you don't like, and you know what I mean by privacy, right? I'm like, privacy, like not just so life, like everything, because we've got a season, he has everything. So
I'm 36 now, Jafta. If we haven't seen and heard it yet, then I mean, do you know what I'm saying? Right. So if you ever do Big Brother shotgun, I went in. But So you and Temu, you start Samamo. Obviously, there's got to be some teething problems, right? You don't just start this great production company and everyone is knocking at the door and like you want in. How do you go? How do you, like, you've always believed in yourself, but like, where does it come from that you go, I've got this pitch, I'm taking it to the biggest company in Africa and I'm selling it and I believe in it. Where does that come from? And how does that even, how do you even get your foot there? You know?
Yeah. Look, sure. I don't know how to actually explain that, but I think it comes from a place of believing in your ideas, you know, believing in yourself, because everyone has an idea. Everyone has a concept, right? But how much are you willing to fight for your idea, right? Because I can tell you right now, I get a lot of people wanting help to sell the idea. And I tell them, no one helped me. Believe it or not, like, I tried that as well, and I didn't go anywhere. And then one day I woke up, I'm like, okay, cool. I'm going to grow some balls and do it myself, because no one will do it for me. And it is that attitude, right? If you, like, I think it's just pure, like, science or quantum physics or whatever, lack of a better term. If you focus on something, right, and you do it over and over and over, and you craft it, and you,
it's gonna happen.
Work on it.
Yeah,
it's gonna happen. You know, you're gonna get better and better and better and better at it. So that's what I did. I'm like, cool. Maybe my concept is not prepared in a satisfactory way. So I go on YouTube. You know, I Google how to put a pitch together. You know, I would then sitting in pitches. You know, when other companies pitch, because as a director, I'm exposed to that. I take notes. Oh, okay, that's what they do. Oh, you know? And then the first round of pitches, like, yo, I started pitching back with Daryl and them, remember?
Mm.
And back in those days, it was like this BE thing, and it wasn't really like real pitching. Then I went, and every time I pitched by myself independently, there was a lot of rejection. Like, I don't know. I think I got, like, rejected, like, 100 times in different, like, a lot of times. And you feel bad. You feel bad. Like, cool. And you go back and you rework until you get it right. You understand? So a lot of people, they don't want to travel that journey. They just want someone to come and help them.
Mm.
The problem is that person will help you, but they won't help you anytime you pitch. So now your credibility as a producer or whatever, you get exposed, because now they know, okay, cool. It's not their work. Someone did it for them. So when that person is not there, can they deliver?
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? So that's how I managed to get here. I was rejected a lot of times. I had to rework. I had to block negative feedback from people who thought I couldn't do it. You know, I just had to believe in myself. And that's the biggest thing, because there's a lot of doubt out there, you know, especially for concepts, you know, like, who are you? What do you know about? No, you know, we know whoever, you know? So all of that as well, like, and I watch a lot of motivational, like, lecturers from, like, Steven Spielberg, or, you know, from, like, you know, Tyler Perry, you know, to listen to how they did it. And I always learn something, a new trick, you know, like, oh, okay, Spike Lee. Oh, okay, you also struggle. So I'm not the only one. Oh, okay. All right. You know, like, and then for me, it's like, yo, you know, and sometimes it's not even just about other directors. It's about just artists, like a musician, you know. I was watching Jack Parrow, his documentary the other day, you know, when he did a concert. He is such a wonderful, wacky human being, but the amount of work he's putting to get where he is today, you won't believe. Like, proper, solid work, you know, not like, here we go, handing over on a silver plate. Like, he worked over and over the years for you to see this character that he has created, that alter ego, Jack Parrow. It's something he thought about, he crafted with a lot of people behind him. And that's why when you see that persona, you fall in love with that persona because it fits the market and also overlaps into other markets. He's so cool. And he's Brad Pitt, he's Afrikaans, but he's South African and he's international. You know what I'm saying? So I was like, those are the kind of like things that inspire me as well as an artist as well. You know, like, believe in yourself, do the work. Because if you don't do the work, you won't grow. And to stay where you are, you still need to do the work. But also don't be complacent, you know.
Yeah.
You need to grow. So you always have to expose yourself to more challenging opportunities. Because that's how growth comes, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah. I'm so glad that you said that. I've actually had this exact conversation with my sister. She's recently become incredibly, incredibly famous. And it seems like overnight, right? And we've all seen her do this for the longest time. Like, from when she was 15, 16, she was working and grinding and doing the work and putting in the hours and practicing the dancing and writing the songs and recording. And she had no's and no's and no's and no's. Now, all of a sudden, she's Lady Do and she is on everyone's album. And I posted about her the other day and I actually said, you know, you see the Samamo, you see that Jafta's done The Real Housewives, or that Dudu's done Casper Nyovest Vest, or that Zandi's done something with AKA, and you think, wow, I mean, that's great, but I'm jealous because, like, why them? What you don't see is the Jafta that I knew from 17 years ago, hustling, learning everything, working like 18 hour days, Jafta. I remember you working nonstop and like not seeing your wife, not seeing your baby, going to Cape Town, for months at a time, you know? And I think it's so important that we remember that, just like you said, Tyler Perry struggled as well. Everyone does. Yeah. Everyone gets told no. It's how you come back from the no.
Yes.
So, my next question to you is, what have those no's taught you about yourself?
Yeah. You know what? The no's, you know, what they've taught me about myself is that, A, change your attitude. It sucks, you know? because at first, I used to be angry and feel like, okay, cool. You know, these people, they don't actually know what they're talking about because my idea is the shit, you know, only to realize that, hang on, you know, these people, they are there where they are because whoever got them there did their research. Those people are qualified. They know their target audience. They know their market. And that's why their channel is performing. And that's why that company is that big.
Mm.
You understand? So the feedback they give you is for you to take because they care about you and they say, cool, go fix and come back.
Hmm.
So it took me time to realize that, you know, sometimes there's a yes in a no, right? There's good in rejection, right? Because what's worse is for someone to tell you yes, and then you go and you execute and it's a disaster and everyone is watching.
Yeah.
That's your downfall. Because now no one will ever call you. You're gone. So I think I've just been lucky to get just the right number of no's, even though there's like 100 of them. But all those no's have equipped me, you know, to be qualified enough so that when there's a yes, whatever I've done has always been a hit. Like, I've never done a flop television show or whatever. And, you know, touch wood, I still hope. So, because even today, at this level that I am, I'm still getting rejections on some ideas because, and nowadays, I appreciate the notes because I'm like, okay, cool. It means I must go back to the drawing board. There's something I'm missing, you know? And obviously, they'll never tell you because you're not the only person pitching. There are other people. So they tell you, no, this and this is not happening. It doesn't fit. So you have to go and figure out, you know, because you must do your homework as well, you know? Mm. So it has taught me over the years to adjust my attitude, to always find an opportunity, you know, to learn something that, you know, I might have missed. And I've been doing that a lot, you know, and also being patient, you know, because at first I used to be, I mean, I've always been patient, you know, and lately what I do, like I take time, you know, to think about things before I open my mouth, before I just used to, like, you know, be irrational and say what I wanted to say at that moment. Now I take time to think about things, you know. And I think maybe that's because I'm 37 this year, you know. I'm turning 37. I don't know. You know, it's the older you get, you know, the wiser you get, you know. So those are the two things I think I've learned over the years from the know, is that attitude, you know, adjust to attitude, always see the good and bad and the yes and the no, you know, and also patience, you know. Rome was not built overnight.
Yeah.
You know? My company is not where I want it to be. And I've learned that, you know, sometimes it can take 10 years. It can take 20 years. It can take 50 years for me to get the company where I want it. And I must do the work. You know, Morgan Freeman, his first break was at 50 years, Danny. 50.
I am so glad you're telling
big break at 50. You understand what that means?
Okay.
At 50, Morgan Freeman got his first break. That's when all of us have given up. Mm. I mean, I'm 37. I would have given up a long time ago by 50, you know? So be patient. Don't rush. You know? So I'm doing small productions. Obviously, I've got ideas for big productions. But baby steps, you know? And my mentors, you know, they tell me that, like, look, even though we know we've done big productions, like I've done Catch of the Choirs, I've done Big Brothers, mm. I've done Survivor. They know I can do that. But can my company execute that?
Yeah.
Probably it can, but I need to be patient.
Yeah.
And now I understand it. Before I didn't get it, I'm like, just people, you know, it's who you know. No, it's not about, it's like, there's a time for everything, you know?
Mm. Okay. Last question before we get into the real reason that I asked you on the show. How is Simamo changing the landscape of the South African TV industry? Because I think that there are stories that need to be told that haven't been told yet because we haven't had the right people producing and directing those stories.
Yes.
And there are inherently South African stories that we need to hear. All of us, where no matter where you're from in this country, no matter what color you are, there are stories that we need to hear. And I think there's a big responsibility on you guys as producers and creatives to tell these stories. So talk to me a little bit about that and how you intend to move the landscape going forward.
Cool. I love that question. So I'm not going to take credit, right? We are part of the movement at Simamo, right? In playing a role in telling authentic stories for South Africans. So I think we were previously conditioned to consume westernized content.
Yeah.
Right? And that has been changing slowly over the past couple of years, if not a decade, thanks to local channels like SABC 1, Mzansi Magic,
yeah.
Mzansi Way 2, CakeNet, mm. you know, Via, you know, like channel that speaks to the actual demographic or group, you know. I mean, there are other channels that speak to other demographics. But then at Simamo, we recently did a show about that. It's called One Kolota, right? So, and not just like on like social level, but on like a personal family level, where you know, like you could have a nice relationship with a best friend or your sister. You know, like, you know what, I need to do this thing with my career. You know, I just need 30K to get this visa and whatever. And I'm going to get, I promise you. And then it happens. You know, she gets paid and she stays in the UK for like whatever, but she never pays you back the 30K. And now the sisterhood starts getting a bit like sour. You guys are not talking over time because, yo, you're earning euros outside and I just want my 3,000 euros, whatever. You know, just pay me. But she never does. And eventually she comes back to SA and, you know, she gets married, but she never pays. So now that bond of siblings
is gone.
It's now broken. And but you're like, no, but that's not right. And you involve your mom and your brother and it becomes, and you fed up.
Yeah.
Christmas
is a mess.
The lawyers.
Birthdays are a mess. Family gatherings.
You know what I'm saying? You went to the lawyers, you went to small claims court, and now there's no relationship anymore. And we're the last resort. And then we're like, cool. Maybe if we expose her on TV, she'll get into her senses. And then we bring you guys together. So what do we work on? We work on mending that relationship and also finding the truth why she can't pay you. Maybe there's a reason.
Mm.
But also because she's still your sister, you know? And that's one thing I think that a lot of people don't realize, that it's a common story across all the cultures, across all the demographics, you know, like, because commercial debt, like owning a bank and owning whatever, that's like rubbish. It's those interpersonal, and sometimes a lousy 2,000, or like you took my car and you never returned it. Like you broke up with someone you were dating and they never returned your car. Like, I want my car, it's my property, bro. You know what I'm saying?
Wow.
So we're getting a lot of interesting stories, and the focus is on the broken relationships, right? Okay. Another one we're doing, which is what we're going to talk about right now, is that one of, you know, cheating, infidelity. But in this instance, the couple, you know, they don't discuss that the one partner wants an open relationship. They've never discussed that. And the one partner suspects that there is another person, but you've never spoken about that person. So you either you're going to choose, because I know about that person and I spoke to you about that person, but you're still with them. So it's not like a cheater's where I suspect my partner's cheating. It's like, I know there's someone, because your patterns have changed. You know, you come late sometimes and I've busted you on your phone, and I've heard from certain people, and I also contacted that person at some point and they agreed, and I told them to back off, but they said yes, but clearly they're still in the picture. So we then say, okay, cool. This is always like, you know, an issue, but there's never an opportunity for all the three parties to ever sit down and talk about it. So this is that show. Yes.
I think there's a reason, Jafta. I think there's a reason.
I think this
shit is going to escalate into like a Dr. Phil moment. Like when I shoot.
I know, right?
Okay. So Jafta did a post on Instagram and Facebook. Simamo are looking for people. So if you suspect that your partner has a side piece, Jafta and Temba and Simamo want to get all three of you in a room together and talk it out, right? In a very safe, non-judgmental,
civil way. Yeah.
How? Jafta? How? Because I know South Africans and I know South African women, and
I know
there is going to be blood, dude. Blood.
No, I know. So they're used to cheaters, right? Because what cheaters has done, it has taught us that it is right to solve things in a violent manner. Those people are never happy. If you watch Cheaters, it always ends in tears. Yeah. Because, you know, drama and, you know, like, let's be violent and all that shit. No. Sometimes, like, you know, like, that's why politicians, even though they are dodgy, but that's why they get cities built, and that's why they get wars to end. Because they sit down and they talk. They talk about difficult concepts and difficult ideologies and difficult subjects. But they talk, they sit. So, yeah, people come frustrated. They come, you know, like revved up to like, and you're like, our host you know, keeps on reminding them that, hey, we are creating a facilitation so that everyone says their piece. And at the end, you know, the person who's unhappy will ask the partner, who's the common person, why are they doing this? And it's up to them after they speak and the side piece speaks, whether they give an ultimatum to like choose between me and her, or, I mean, it can be any type of relationship, homosexual, heterosexual, transgender, you know, we cater to all sexual orientation, relationships. And if maybe they want to continue and, you know, all of them do like this polygamist or polyamorous or open relationship, you know, but we're finding very interesting engagements in this format, in this type of show, because people always assume what the other person's intentions are until that person can say what their intentions were. You will never move forward with a complete idea or a complete heart. No conclusion whatsoever. So this show does that. And obviously, I don't want to disclose, we've shot 3 episodes so far, but it's like beautiful content. It's gonna blow the country away. Like people are gonna be like, oh, so this is exactly what's gonna happen if I actually come forward. So what happens is that a lot of people do respond, but then when you tell them about the TV aspect, the cameras, you know, they get cold feet because they are used to cheaters. So they think that is how we're going to execute and portray them on TV. Like we're gonna, you know, spice things so that they end up, you know, slapping chat and bouncers trying to, no. That is like we do an actual briefing and the workshop before the cameras arrive. We do a back end consultation on the phone. We have a psychologist who like, cool, this is what's gonna happen. You know, we have security on site on the phone, we have a psychologist, we have all these resources. Because yes, we want you to actually say your mind and speak your mind because you're not happy, right? Or talk the truth if you are the person in the middle, right? Playing these two people. Or if you are the side, you also have a chance to voice, why are you in the picture when you know this person is in a committed relationship, you know? So everyone is given the platform to speak. And at the end, you know, there's a way forward. Whether we end in one side and you guys can carry on, or, you know, this whole thing is like, you know, whatever, bleep, 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 you know, but at least this approach of doing things is so refreshing because it has not been done before. You know?
Yeah.
What's that guy on American television where the couples always fight?
Dr. Phil.
The other one.
Steve.
You know that show where they always fight? Yeah, Jerry Springer,
yes.
You know, that's like trash. That's like trash TV, then. It's trash TV. I mean, I suspect those people are paid to fight. Because how do you, every episode on cue, have people who are married, people who have babies with each other? And I mean, the guys, like they go in, man. And the security is always like just at the right time. You know, like comes in. I mean, come on. No.
Jeff, just tell me a little bit about.
So we want content.
Sorry, go.
No, I was just running up that thought, but it's fine.
No, I want to know about, so you've shot some episodes already. So you've already had some feedback from the general public. What is the general vibe with the side piece? Like, are we accepting of a side piece in 2021? Like, is it like fun, or is it, I'm going to kill you both? Like, what is the vibe now?
Yeah. So obviously, so the person who writes in is, we label them the complainant, right? And we also, another name for them is they are the main person, right? So we have the main person because they are the main person in the relationship. And then there's the partner who is now the one playing both sides. And then there's the side, who's obviously the side, the spare wheel. So they go in, it depends on the depth of the relationship, right? The ones that are fairly young, like 2 months, 3 months, They're like, yo, I just want this person to verify if they are still that person, because last time I spoke to him about that person was out the picture. And I want to know so that I can stay or go, right? That's always the feeling. But the ones that have years and years, they're not interested. They're like, I want to talk to them both. I want to know the details. How long they've been doing this? And then if it's too heartbreaking, I'm going anyway, you know? But I'll be happy because I don't want to go and I don't know what happens while I was being played, you know? And some are interested, like, you know, in like an open relationship. Like, you know, you're living in the 21st century now. So if he wants to, yeah, you can, but you must also give me the opportunity to also find my side. And you can all be a big family, you know, a whole foursome, you know, kind of thing, you know.
Jay, obviously, are you seeing...
Like, those are like millennials. I mean, the older generation, I don't think they...
I can't see our age group being like, yeah, we'll be fine, all four of us.
No.
Our age group going, fuck off. But tell me something. Are you seeing more and more online kind of relationships, like more an emotional than a physical relationship, or is it still very much physical?
Elaborate further. What do you mean?
So like a lot of articles that I'm reading about other like side pieces, right? They are not in real life side pieces. They're on the phone. They're through Instagram, DMs, whatever. And you're sending each other dodgy videos, pictures. And there's more of an emotional connection as opposed to like meeting at the hotel down the road for like a hookup, you know? Are you seeing any of that kind of like online side pieces or are you seeing still the same like in real life?
Real life.
Okay.
Most is real life. Because also we have an obligation to do to qualify the story, right? So in order for you to qualify to come on Face to Face, which is the name of the show, is that you have to have evidence that your partner has physically been in like contact or in a relationship with the other person. If you're still online dating, then it doesn't qualify because, you know, the other person can just say, yeah, but I was just like bored, and you know, and you shouldn't just suspect that there's someone. You should know for a fact that that person is in the picture. And why? Because you spoke to them over the phone at some point and they did admit to, yes, I slept with him, I kissed him, it was one night stand or whatever, and we still meet on Thursdays at Rose Bank, you know, that kind of vibe. So there has to be that. Or, yeah, I've got a child with him. And you just find out and you're like, what? You know? Yeah. So whereas on cheaters, you know, it's like, I suspect because he's like now really different. Yeah. Or yeah, Jola 99, which is that major lab show.
Okay. I'm already in. When is it launching? When are we looking at the first episodes out?
So that's still confidential.
Yeah. Okay. Fine.
You know, because there's a whole marketing campaign that, you know, the broadcaster, which I also can mention, wants to do around that.
Okay, but you're still looking for people, right?
We are looking for people indeed. And I mean, like I said, this show is, you know, to have that platform to have a conversation with your partner and the side and then take it from there, you know.
I still foresee some blood, but I mean, I'm in for it. So if someone watching wants to take part, where do they go? What do they do?
So there is a number and an email address. The email address is...
In the comments.
Must I? Okay, let me put it here.
I'll put it in the comments.
Are you putting it in the comments?
I'll put it in the comments.
Oh, yes. It's admin@samamoproductions.co.za. And the number, I'll look on it on my phone while we're still talking. I didn't prepare that. And I'll tell you about the number shortly.
Okay. So looking for any color, any sexual orientation, any number of years spent together, married, not married, whatever. Like, you're looking for it all, right?
Yes. You can be from any demographic, any race. You know, obviously, you know, you need to be an adult. You can't be having teenagers, yeah? You know, any sexual orientation, as long as there's three people involved.
Or more.
Or more.
Wait, have you had more? Have you had like four or five?
There was someone who contacted us. And when we spoke to the side then said, I don't mind coming on a TV show, but I'm attracted to this person, but I also have a girlfriend who doesn't know. So if I come on this show, my girlfriend is going to realize I'm... So there's four.
Guys, can we not be this messy in 2021? Like, seriously, I am here for this show. Okay, so I'm going to put all of the information at the bottom here. It will also be on the Jacaranda FM website. It'll be on XO TV video. It'll be absolutely everywhere. Go and sign up. Go and see. I mean, maybe you can confront your side or your boyfriend's side or whomever's side. What have you learned about relationships from this? Because, I mean, you've been married forever. You've been married for longer than I have. But what has this adventure taught you?
Okay, before that, the number is, so if you don't email, you can WhatsApp to 066-526-9663. That's 066-526-9663. Right. The question, what have I learned from?
What have you learned from this adventure? Because you've been married for longer than I have. I mean, I'm not going to lie. I haven't always been very good. But obviously during this show, it's going to teach you a lot about your relationship and your strengths and your weaknesses. What have you learned about your relationship from this?
Look, no one is perfect. Let me start there, right? Yeah. In the 18 years I've been married, not married. I've been with my wife for 18 years. This is the 19th year. And I think we've been married for like 10 years now. But I was not perfect. You know, I made a lot of mistakes, you know, and I'm not going to get into the details, you know. We broke up once, you know, and you hurt each other, you know, and then you fix things, you know. But it's, when you break up with someone and then you realize, oh shit, this person is like, they matter, you know, because when I'm not with them, I feel like I'm low on oxygen or like my legs can't stand up straight, you know, and they complete you, you know, and that there must be a priority, you know. I mean, it took me a while to understand that friends come second or friends come last, you know. Your wife comes first. Your family comes first. And then everyone else comes second, you know. And sometimes you're like, yo, man, I just want to hang with the boys. I'll see you whenever. No. It's must be the other way around. Like friends, I'll see you whenever. Can I just, you know, you need to come to a point with your spouse or your family where you're like, you know what, maybe we need time apart, you know, do a girl's night or, and yeah, cool. Not, yo, we need to spend some time together. Cause then it's like, why are you not spending time together? You know? So, I mean, only in the past couple of years, I realized the importance of that, you know, because I'm building a family, I'm building memories, I'm leaving a legacy, and it can end anytime. And that's what COVID has shown us, right? That people you love can go away just like that. So I value my family very much. I value my wife very much. And, you know, I try my best to stay in the right lane, you know. Yes, we still argue from time to time, like we're normal people, about small things, like small domestic things, like, yo, like, why didn't you wash the dishes? You know, like, can you know, like small things, like, I thought you were going to feed the pets. No, but they are your dogs. What do you mean they're my dogs? These dogs are our dogs, you know, that kind of thing, you know? So, I mean, that's that. The show, sometimes I look at these people like, yo, you guys are still starting. I mean, and go get through this. If you're meant to be together, you will get through whatever this is. And all the best, you know?
Please tell your beautiful wife I say hello and I send my love.
I will. She's going to be happy because she knows you very well, you know? She's gonna be
happy. And I do think at some point when we can, we need to go have many beers.
Yo, I can't wait.
It's time. But Jafta, thank you for this. I'm wishing you all the best. Break all the legs. Break all the records. Win all the awards, the TV awards, the everything awards. And remember, Big Brother for Danny, before I'm 60, okay?
Danny, mark my words. You asked for it. So when it arrives at your doorstep, don't chicken out, right? When Big Brother comes back, I'm going to exclusively invite you to come audition.
Done.
And don't back out.
I want done. I'm in. Jafta, I'm in. What do I have to lose at this point? Do you know what I'm saying? I have no responsibilities. I have a dog that won't stop fucking barking throughout this whole Zoom. Like, I need the space. I need the space for my life. So take me. I'm yours.
You know? And also for me, Danny, thank you so much for this platform, for this opportunity. I get so anxious when people want to interview me because I'm not the greatest speaker, you know? I do my things quietly. But because... you know, your family, and you know, you made it feel so casual and so comfortable. Thank you for allowing me to also speak about my show. And I'm hoping for some response, you know. And I'll let you know when that happens, because I'm sure it will.
Let me know, because my Jacaranda FM weirdos will be in. We love the weirdos. Jafta, love you lots. Thank you.
Thank you, Jenny. All right.
Remember, you can catch the full video on exotv.me, and you can meet us in kind of real life. Thanks to DJ Chalk for the music. You can catch him at www.chalksprosound.co.za. New episodes on Jackpod and ExoTV every Monday. Love you.